Hi, everybody. I'm Bill Whittle here in the Ruins of Civilization, and this is my friend Alfonso Rachel, who is in a much cooler, bluer, and more laid-back place than I am, which is about, I don't know, 80 miles to the east of me. And this is the Virtue Signal made possible by the members of BillWhittle.com. Zoe, the situation in Afghanistan and the utter debacle of it is, we know what it is. And I personally have become about as angry as I have been about anything at the idea of American soldiers turning American citizens away at the airport gates and so on. And now we've completely evacuated. Whoever is left there is left there. But there is there's a little beacon of light in the middle of all this darkness. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk about today. Stories are coming out about two things happening that made me very happy in the face of this catastrophe. And they're related. One of them is we're starting to hear stories that a number of soldiers of various ranks simply disobeyed those orders. They simply disobeyed them. When they were told, turn everybody away, including Americans, they just disobeyed those orders. And even more to the point, now, again, this is still pretty early, but I've heard it from two reliable sources. A number of people, and I think it's hundreds of people, have been gotten out of Afghanistan by private American citizens, almost exclusively former soldiers, and of them almost exclusively former special operations soldiers, who have simply raised money or gotten together with their friends and, believe it or not, gone around the far side of the planet on their own dime and on their own initiative and rescued Americans and gotten them and Afghan allies out of there, not only without the aid of the military, but in spite of the American military. And so that's what I wanted to talk about today, because I think it's a uniquely American trait, and that is initiative. Initiative is, it's the ability to take action without prior authorization. It's the reason that we were so effective in World War II, and the reason that we've been, as a general rule, Americans are such extraordinarily good war fighters. We lose the peace, but that's because the people who won the war aren't running the peace. My dad told me a story. He was a second lieutenant in the Army, and when I was a kid growing up, he told me that in Western Europe during the war, if there was an unknown situation, so everything's fluid, nobody really knows what's going on right on the front lines. He said that in a German outfit, if a lieutenant saw a village that appeared to be unoccupied, he would have to get on the phone and call division. They call up, you know, call. This was certainly true in Iraq, certainly, where you couldn't really do anything in the Iraqi army unless Saddam personally approved it. He said in the American army, on the other hand, if a second lieutenant was looking through binoculars, didn't see any soldiers in a town, he was just on a recon mission, he would just take the town. You know, why sit around here and wait and do nothing? There's nobody there. Here we are. Let's go take the town. And actually, my favorite story of World War II, I think, is when Patton is moving his Third Army through the bowels of Germany, he was bypassing a town, I don't remember the name of the town, but he radioed back to Eisenhower at headquarters and said, hey, Ike, I want to take this town. And Eisenhower radioed him back and said, no, no way, George, it's going to take too long, consume too many men, it's absolutely out of the question. And Patton then radioed him back a couple hours, and he said, I've already taken the town, do you want me to give it back? and that is such an American quality. It may be the American quality. It's the ability to act not only without prior authorization, but in a situation where there are no rules. I'm immediately reminded of Apollo 13 and the fact that, okay, we've got this absolute catastrophe now, and there is no book. We can't do this by the book because there is no book for this. So we're going to take everything that's on board that vehicle. We're going to put it on a table. Now we have to figure out a way to make this air filter fit into this carbon dioxide scrubber. Or we're going to have the command module pilot on the ground is going to sit there in the simulator, in the dark, in the cold, and figure out what this restart sequence is. Again and again and again, we seem to find that this is it's certainly not a uniquely American quality, but it is definitely a primarily American quality. And just to wrap up this oration, another example of this was this story, which actually Clint Eastwood made a movie about. It didn't do a lot of business. But many years ago now, 7, 8, 10 years ago, An Islamic terrorist got on a French train with an AK-47 and was about to go through there and just start killing people. And the French people on board were calling their family saying goodbye. You know, there's a guy here with a gun. He's going to kill us all. And the guy with the gun was taken down by three people. And all three of them were Americans. They just got out of their chairs and just said, no, we're not just going to sit here and die by the book. No. Initiative, Flight 93 on September 11th, 20 years ago, almost we're within 2 weeks of that. The passengers didn't just sit there and say, well, you know, I guess this is the end. No, they got up and killed the guy who was guarding the door, and then they tried to break the door down, and they did. They just didn't get there in time. And I know I'm going on and on and on and on, but every time I mention Flight 93 on September 11th, I have to say this. Flight 93 not only was our junior varsity team against their, you know, Olympians, but Flight 93 was the only one of the four airplanes that actually knew what was happening. And the reason I say that is because if the other three flights had known what was happening or was going to happen, they would have done the same thing. All four of them would have done the same thing. If those other passengers on those three other planes knew in advance that we're going to fly this plane into a building, they would have done something too. So anyway, initiative, it's something that is predicated on confidence. It's predicated on a belief in yourself without being arrogant about it. And it also seems to be something that's being almost intentionally driven out of the American population.
And ain't it fantastic, man, when you have a well-guided initiative and have a sense of like what kind of good initiative to take. I think somebody put up a meme and I just saw it. I saw it in a meme. I didn't actually see the reports of this, but speaking of initiative, was it Glenn Beck is having private jets? He raised money to have private jets sent over to help evacuate.
There you go. That's now, exactly the kind of thing I'm talking about.
That's that. Now, that is well-guided initiative. And along with the meme somebody put, it's like, notice that this is Glenn Beck doing that. This isn't Zuckerberg doing it. This isn't Dorsey doing it. This isn't Bezos doing it. It's like, hey, man.
No, and that's a really good point. They are conspicuous by their absence, aren't they?
I reckon so. It's like, hey, Bezos, can you come back to Earth for a second, man? Because all those resources that you have to get into space, don't you have some of them resources to maybe get some people out of some hostile space? But hey, it's
never occurred to him. Yeah. It never entered his head.
Yeah, and you know, I'm no Judas, man. I'm not the kind of person who's like looking at somebody's resources, say this is what you ought to be doing with it. You know, because even Jesus say, man, leave that person alone. That's their stuff. You know, you don't have any sovereignty over their stuff. Leave them alone. But you know, when I'm talking about like with initiative. We got a lot of people out there taking a lot of initiative, and it's evil initiative. And initiative is definitely important, but what's also really important is where you're going, how you're directing it, and where it's being directed from. You know, when we have in this fight that we have right now, that's you know, the initiative to pull our military out of Afghanistan. Now that's going to require another initiative to fix things there before it spreads out of control and starts to come over here. That was an initiative that just wasn't practical, right? But it took a lot of initiative to do that, and it cost a lot. So even, you know, when we're talking about the initiatives that are being taken, there's a lot of initiative, even people who just, they want us to have this system where we're socially responsible to each other. They're taking a lot of initiative to do that because I guess at the end of the day, they're not going to have to take a lot of initiative to do anything because all their provisions are going to be met by the state.
Right.
It's like, wow, man, this is really misguided initiative. So when we're going to take initiative to do something, consider what it's going to cost. As Dr. Thomas Sowell would say, okay, you want to do that? Have you considered what it's going to cost, you know, to do that? Is that well allocated uses of resources to do that? Have you considered what that's going to cost in the long term and the short term? So take the initiative to see how this stuff is really going to play out in the real world, not just according to what it looks like on paper. You guys have obviously taken a lot of initiative to read, but have you taken the initiative to really see how this is played out in the real world historically? And look up for a second instead of like looking at your phone and look up for a second and see how this is playing out in the real world. Take the initiative to do that.
Yeah, I think the kind of initiative I'm talking about, this kind of American, yeah, of course we could, we'll do that. Yeah, we'll figure out a way. Let's get going. Let's roll. That's the line from 9/11. Let's roll. And that was not issued by a SEAL member. It was issued by a graphic designer or something. Let's roll. Yes. So I'm in favor of let's roll in a big way. And one of the ways you can destroy initiative is to eliminate reward for doing well and eliminate the punishment for initiative that turns out catastrophically. And that's what we've seen in the last 20 or 30 years. If everybody comes in first, if nobody wins a baseball game, if everybody gets a participation trophy, then you are intentionally, whether this is your intent or not, and I think probably in the beginning, I don't think anybody realized it, but I think that ship has sailed. You are destroying initiative. If you're basically saying, if I'm going to take a risk to do something above and beyond, and I get no reward out of it, or furthermore, if I do something awful and I get no punishment for it, then the smart play is to just sit in the group and nod and wait. And businesses are reporting this and have been for almost a decade now, where the new employees that they're hiring, young people, are not capable of doing simple projects without constant supervision and constant approval and constant, gratification. They're just almost incapable of being able to do so. All right, look, here's what I need. I need 400 balloons, and I need them in Cincinnati. I need them at 5 o'clock today. Okay, how do I do that? That's not, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like, you figure out how to do it. I don't have a team leader. And this is a problem.
Indeed, man. And I think, so it sounds like you may be talking about like initiative and incentive. What's the incentive to take the initiative to do this? Like when we talk about, those heroes on Flight 93, what's the incentive? Well, we want to go home to our families. And if we can't have that, well, we're going to have the incentive of saying you're not taking this plane without a fight. Oh, we're gonna get some, right?
It's like, right. But that happened on American flights, and it didn't happen on that French train. Mm. So there is something culturally different and something culturally magnificent about America, many things. And this is one of them.
Well, I think with America, it has to have this foundation of something where we understand that our rights are God-given. And even though so many people are trying to get away from it, here's the thing that makes our humanity and our sin. Even though people try to take liberties with this, they'll do it. That's, you can't help that. That's always going to be. But we're still founded in the idea that these rights are God-given and that man is created in the image of God. You do not tread upon what was made in the image of God. We're not gods. We're simply representatives of. That's what we were made for. We were made to represent God in nature. So when you have people who say, no, you're not going to do this, that's something that makes us different from every other country. It makes us different is that you have these rights. You have this standing in the world that you are made in the image of God and your rights are God-given. And we're going to uphold that. We're going to stand for that. So I think with other people where they're just ready to die, where they're, ready just, okay, there's nothing that we can do about this and we'll just be complacent with it and we'll just allow ourselves to be slaughtered. That's not wired into us. And some would say that, doesn't your word tell you to turn the other cheek? It's like, yeah, it does. That's not a license to give people to abuse us. That's knowing when this is something that's just merely, long story short, it's something that just may be like merely an insult that you don't really need to escalate. And if this person got to a point where they wanted to slap you, did you consider what you might have been lending to the argument? It's like, maybe you might have needed to come from a different direction. And if this
person, if you get slapped 15 times a day, maybe it's you.
Right. Well, also there's a combative aspect to this though, that folks need to understand. The principle here is telegraphy. If I can kind of just rabbit trail really quick, just to explain this. It specifically says if a person strikes you on your right cheek, turn the other one to them. People are typically right-handed. If a person slaps you on your right cheek, that means that they did it with their weak hand. There's no threat there, right? And if you're able to take that insult, other people witnessing are just like, okay, buddy, that person just took a slap from you and is keeping their cool. You might want to stand down. Now, if a person is going to hit you on their right cheek with their strong hand, they're going to have to cross their body, and that's a big telegraph. the Lord is always telling us to be ready. You don't let somebody strike you with that big telegraphed hit, right? You should know what to do about that. Either get out of the way of it, block it, and be able to counter. That's what that's for. And as we discussed earlier, Bill, nothing is new under the sun, and the Bible is a book of preventative measures and warnings. A lot of this stuff that we're seeing, we should be able to take the initiative to heed the warning, to not get in these big messes that we're getting in, because now it's going to take huge initiative to get out of it, and huge initiative on how to agree to get out of it.
Which brings me to kind of capital I initiative in terms of a society rather than in terms of individuals. The person who had the most effect on me becoming a conservative is, without question, is P.J. O'Rourke. And that's because I thought he was really, really funny. And and I was a fan of his when he was a red diaper baby bomb thrower. But he really brought me around because he could make it funny and kind of cool. And he had an example that I thought it never left me. He said because P.J. used to go around the world for Rolling Stone. They'd pay him to go to places and write stories about weird things. And he said he's seen it everywhere, but he never saw it so clearly as he was in a village. It might have been in the Ukraine. To say he was dealing with Caucasian people is to understate the case, because you look out the window and there are the Caucasus Mountains, right? So this is as Caucasian as you get. And basically what he said was he was in this village and he said the soil was so rich, he said you could just boil it for soup. You know, it's just the best farmland in the world. And he would see again and again and again these villages where there would be like an open sewer in the middle of the one, you know, road between the houses in this little village, just a running sewer. And he had a line I never forgot. He said, there's not an American alive who wouldn't see something like that and just say, just give me $200 in an hour at Home Depot and I will fix this forever. Forever. And they don't. They don't. They don't fix it forever. And the reason they don't fix it is because that's the way it was for their fathers and their mothers and their grandfathers and their grandfathers. That running sewer has always been there. And therefore, it doesn't even enter their head. And that tells me that all of the progress, if you look at a line of wealth in the world, it's like flatlined. Everybody has nothing. And all of a sudden, along comes the Industrial Revolution and capitalism and up. It's because of this genetic freak initiative gene. And I remember being so struck by this because I would look at situations like this, and I'd look at situations in the third world. Everything's run down, nothing's in repair, nothing's maintained, everything's just band-aided together, you know. And I remember thinking, what's wrong with these people? And then I had the thunderbolt idea, which is there's nothing wrong with those people. That's how people have always been. That is human history as far back as human history goes. And then along comes this freak idea that, no, you can improve your situation. Really? Yeah. You don't have to be run by your environment. You can run the environment. And ultimately, this tells me that initiative comes back down to the core, single core philosophy that I believe in, and that's individualism. Right? If nobody's responsible for anything, then nobody does anything. But an individual can start a process, and then everybody else will join him. And if you're really clever, like Huck Finn, you can pretend to enjoy a nasty job like whitewashing a fence. And if you look like you're enjoying it enough, then you get other people to do it for you.
Love it, love it. And you know, I think that's a big part of how, you know, the progressives, the so-called progressives, the Democrats, the left, that's how they've been able to promote their lunacy, because they know how to create a party out of it. You know, they put the dazzle on it, and they're the ones who make it look like, oh, they are just living the best party, and you want to be a part of this movement. Everything is all accepting. We'll have parades and all that sort of stuff. And they make it look like what they're doing is just really the best time on earth. And this is being orchestrated by the most miserable people on earth. I guess, you know, since, you know, they don't really know how to make themselves happy, but they know how to create the illusion of happiness. And there's a lot of initiative that goes behind that. And And it really has gotten a lot of people involved to America's peril. You know, when we talk about even America, the American thing to do, sometimes, you know, I wonder a lot of time, well, whose America are we talking about? I mean, now we understand that America, we know what America was founded for. And then we have people who have a fantasy of what America is. And we're trying
to— What they want it to be.
What they want it to be, you know, for now. And here's the thing. When we talk about individualism, for their individual desires, this is what they think that America should be. And of course, this has reached critical mass because a lot of these individuals, they do seem to have become the Borg, really.
It's like, yeah, they are.
You know, but
uniformity of thought, uniformity of opinion. Anybody who thinks differently is immediately cast out. And not only that, but the other, you know, the big other out there, the dangerous other, the Trump supporters and all the rest of them. None of their ideas must be allowed to be heard, because if they are, they may convert people.
Right. But isn't it amazing how these people have promoted themselves as the free thinkers?
Sure.
You know, to be a part of this collective is the woke thing to do. And I mean, wow, you want to talk about the initiative to put together this propaganda to just pound this, you know, this pound the culture and just inundate them with this idea. That's where we are. And, you know, and in doing so, it's like tenderizing to me. They're doing it on a cultural level, and it manifests on a political level. And unless there is the initiative to counter them where they are, this lunacy is going to continue to spread.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So, you know, encourage your kids to go climb trees and stay out after dark and ride their bicycles and hang out with their friends. If they're not home by a certain time, shout out the window again. And if they're not home by another certain time, then it may be time to start looking for them. But generally speaking, all of this collectivism is designed to eliminate initiative. And if I look at the world board politically and economically, and everybody's talking about, oh, China's going to take over, China's going to do the China. I'm not worried about China. If we maintain anything like a shred of our national character, China doesn't have a chance against us, because China is a perfect society designed to eliminate initiative. They have an expression in China, the nail that stands up, you know, is the one that's hammered down. And uniformity of opinion and thought can provide some really amazing short-term benefits, but all of the future belongs to people with original ideas. And we still have that here, thank God, and we're trying to preserve that. And that's why this show is here. And it's made possible by members of BillWhittle.com, individuals who have taken the initiative to say, instead of just watching stuff, I'm going to help make it happen, because if I don't help make it happen, it's not going to happen. If you're one of those people, we're very grateful. And if you'd like to be one of those people, you can go to BillWhittle.com and become a member, or you can click the one-time donation if you'd like. All of it helps. And helps keep messages like this out there, struggling out through the blanket that they're trying to throw over all good ideas. And they're not succeeding. For my friend Alfonso Rachel, I'm Bill Whittle. We'll see you next time right here on the Virtue Signal.